Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke Bryan!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome. Happy Tuesday. You are listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, flying the tangent train a little solo to kick off this Tuesday afternoon, but with some assistance by Evan on the ones and twos. How you doing?
Happy to help, man. Happy to help.
And appreciate that help. Gonna be joined in some efforts to recombobulate at 2:30 by Dan Schaefer to kick around some tangents with Dan, author of The Recombobulation Area, a local publication out of the Milwaukee area covering all things Milwaukee and Wisconsin. And we're going to preview tonight's State of the Union address that will be given by President Joe Biden at 8 p.m. Central Time. You'll be able to tune in to your local civic media radio station to hear the State of the Union address. And it will be anchored by our news director here at Civic Media, Terry Bell, along with several other contributors. So, no need to watch. You can just tune in and listen to the State of the Union and all that excellent coverage brought to you by Civic Media this evening, 8 to 10 p.m. Tune in for the State of the Union address. And so Dan and I will be previewing that address, talking about the president's visit to Wisconsin that is scheduled for tomorrow, and kicking around some other Wisconsin headlines at 2:30. But up until then, those phone lines are open if you want to share a tangent with me on this Tuesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. There's only certain tasks that can be solved by one man and one man alone, and that is Mr. Brian Kelly, and we wish him his best in the endeavors that he is doing on behalf of the Civic Media team across the state of Wisconsin today. He's got a couple pit stops, so unable to join us here on the airwaves, but with us in spirit. And I know, Evan, I know that Brian would want to contribute to this story, but this is where we're going to kick it off, because we might be able to get some righteous outrage from you as well. Let me know, Evan, if you've seen this headline yet.
All right.
But Wisconsin Watch has a new piece by investigative journalist Matt DeFore, headlined, "After Rejecting Staffing Request, Wisconsin Republicans Seek to Audit DSPS." That's the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Did you see this one, E?
No, I haven't. Oh, buddy, what's going on?
Have you heard, and this is kind of, it was a little bit of a punching bag last year leading up to the election, but not as prominent as I think some conservatives or Republican officials would have liked. But when you pull on the threads of the sweater, you can kind of tell why, maybe. But there has been a looming crisis at the Department of the Department of Safety and Professional Services. And that is in the process of getting professional licenses out for certain professions here in Wisconsin. So if you need a license to operate your practice, or say if you're a registered nurse, I believe falls under these categories, more than 200 different professions that this department sends out the licensees for.
My wife has some experience with this,
okay,
with this agency over this last year. Yeah, so this is doubly interesting,
yeah,
for me.
So the crisis has been looming because the department, in its archaic nature, Republicans have defunded many, many, many things here in Wisconsin, and this department is one of them as well in recent years. And really, it doesn't rely on state funding a whole lot. It actually uses the cost of the license and other avenues to be able to permits and whatnot to be able to fund this department. Not reliant on a whole lot of need from the state legislature, except since 2017, when then the Walker administration made modifications that gave the legislature more input on whether or not the staffing at this department could be increased, you know, to cover an increase in licensing processing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, Evan, as we've discussed here on these airwaves, the state of Wisconsin, by the end of this decade, by 2030, is going to be facing a worker shortage. We're going to be about 130,000 employees shy of what the state anticipates demand to be. So being able to process lots of licenses for professionals that want to move here and put down roots in Wisconsin and contribute to our economy and address that crisis, that would be pretty important.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I feel like that licensure process, you know, if it takes a really long time.
Well, if you don't invest, if you don't invest in the department that is able to deliver those services, like processing the licenses.
This both. Is a I mean, hard well, one. You know, half of one, six of the other.
Yeah, that's a good point. But the subline, the State Department of Safety and Professional Services amassed a $47 million surplus, and agency call center service plummeted, while the legislature rebuffed Governor Tony Evers' ask for more help. So this reporting over at Wisconsin Watch, giving an excellent insight into what has unfolded, what has led to this crisis at DSPS. And so, reading from the piece, Republican lawmakers are calling for an audit of the State Department of Safety and Professional Services after years of rejecting Democratic Governor Tony Evers' request to add staff, a standoff that has led to long waits for licenses, a huge surplus of agency funds, and frustrated applicants flooding legislative offices with pleas for help. Narrative is everything. We have discussed that many a times. In yesterday's episode, we were unpacking the way that narrative can affect storylines here and news cycles here in Wisconsin. If you missed any portion of that show, you can go to civicmedia.us. You can click on the podcast, excellently titled Around the Trash Man. Thank
it's
you very
half
much.
The fun. It's half the
it
fun.
It is. It's, I would say it's even more than half the fun. It might be more than half the fun. But we dove into narrative a lot yesterday, and it is something Brian and I will continue to discuss, and guests that we have will continue to discuss here on Dueling Tangents. But one of the strongest narratives that Republican lawmakers, not Republican voters, they sometimes buy into it, but the narrative being spun by Republican lawmakers is that government can't work for you. Government can't deliver. And when they act in a way that makes it so that government cannot deliver, it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It is very easy to not do your job in the government and then say that government doesn't work. It's a very good incentive model. But reading from this piece, we can see that Wisconsin Watch is outlining the timeline of what changes happened throughout the last decade of Republican control that has led us to where we are today in this story. So the license fees pay, as I alluded to, pay for the DSPS budget. Pressure on DSPS has mounted, and this is again continuing on from the Matt DeFore piece at Wisconsin Watch, has mounted as Republicans have refused to fully authorize the department's request for more staff over the past 4 years. To catch anybody up, those 4 years was when we had divided control of government here in Wisconsin. That is since Democratic Governor Tony Evers was elected after defeating former Governor Scott Walker. But for the past 4 years, Republicans have refused to authorize those requests for more staff, even though the agency's $62.5 million budget comes almost entirely from fees from 200 plus types of professional licenses and construction permitting, not taxpayer dollars. In fact, the department has amassed a $47 million surplus, very similar to the state's general fund having a very large surplus right now, from those fees, according to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. The surplus was $4.4 million a decade ago. However, DSPS can't use that money to pay for more staff or technology upgrades without legislative buy-in. The Joint Legislative Audit Committee plans to hold a public hearing and vote Tuesday on whether to have the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau review the department's professional license processing program. So without buy-in from the same legislature that as Governor Tony Evers won, as voters said, this is who we would like to be governor in 2018, before he took the oath of office in January of 2019, stripped away powers that former Governor Scott Walker was allowed to have during a lame duck session, an extraordinary session, to remove powers from both the governor's office and the attorney general's office. That is the beginning of the relationship between the Republican-led legislature and Democratic Governor Tony Evers. That's how things kicked off. He won, and that was his welcome to Madison present, I guess. It's not really a gift basket. Pretty terrible way to start off a relationship, in my opinion. But that was what got started. Republicans refused to work and cooperate with agencies run by the governor, including DSPS, where they have refused to increase the staffing. It also goes off of during the Walker administration, there was a proposal to be able to accept federal funds from the then Obama administration to modernize the Department of Workforce Development and make it easier for unemployment insurance claims to be processed by the state. Which then, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit and there was a rush of applicants to receive unemployment insurance, the lack of cooperation by Republicans led to a crisis because that system was not modernized. Just like we now know, over the last 4 years, as there have been requests to increase staffing at DSPS, there is now a crisis of licenses not being processed by the state of Wisconsin because Republicans have designed it this way to not allow the governor to hire more staff or to use the surplus funds that are not from taxpayer dollars but from these licenses themselves to improve the technology or hire more people. We're going to continue on with this piece over at Wisconsin Watch. If you want to share a tangent, 844-967-2789. You're listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. We'll be right back.
People that can't help themselves or help people help themselves.
Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. If you want to keep up with the show, you can follow us on Twitter at Dueling Tangents. You can also follow Civic Media as a network there at Civic Media US on Twitter, Facebook. Find all of your local Civic Media radio stations on social media as well. Just head over to the website, civicmedia.us. You can learn more about what we're doing here across the state of Wisconsin, and you can sign up to be first in the know for where our next stations may be popping up in your neighborhood. And Evan, we're discussing this. You shared the quintessential Grover Norquist quote because, and let's share it with the listening audience.
It's a doozy. So Grover Norquist famously said, "My goal is to cut government in half in 25 years to get it down to the size where we can drown it in the bathtub."
Drown it in the bathtub, but still give them massive, massive corporate tax cuts. Because the government has to be large enough to do that still, but small enough to drown in the bathtub. And over the next couple months, I have a feeling we are going to hear the Joint Committee for Audits, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, excuse me, let's get those letters in the correct order, on their displeasure, their frustration with the Evers administration on how DSPS is handling this crisis. But again, this investigative reporting from Wisconsin Watch gives you the detailed background that you need to know of what led to where this department is now. So this audit comes amid high tension between the Republican-controlled legislature and Evers over agency administration. It also dovetails with a broader push by conservative activists and some GOP lawmakers in Wisconsin and elsewhere to get the government out of the business of licensing and regulating some professions such as music, art, and dance therapists, cosmetology, trainees, and interior designers. So that's what the overhaul here is for this committee. They want to be able to get the government out of those things. But it is insane because if you look at the call center data for DSPS, the problems began before the Evers administration. The agency's call center performance began to drop in 2017 under then-Governor Scott Walker, a Republican, according to data obtained by Wisconsin Watch through a public records request. The department data showed just over half of all calls were, quote, agent-answered in 2018. That would be the final year of the Walker administration. And the reporting continues to outline very terrific numbers and analysis of what led here, but it gets down to the fact, Evan, that in 2017 is when it made it harder without legislative buy-in to be able to have an executive branch operate alone and address these problems. And so even though there is a surplus and there are funds available to address these problems, the legislature can sit on its hands and refuse to buy in to those solutions and let the problem fester. Let the problem get to where we are now. Because again, something I think we need to talk about as often as possible is the fact that the Republican legislature in the first week of March last year called it quits for legislating.
We need a better word than crisis, you know? I mean, these constructed, manufactured circumstances under which, you know, there's a tremendous amount of suffering. You know, people don't get what they need. They don't get licensed. They can't operate. They can't acquire government funding. They can't acquire normal loans. All the, I mean, it snowballs.
They can't get the jobs that are open, that are available, that need to be filled, especially in rural Wisconsin, in communities that need this assistance from these professionals in their communities. And it is exactly that. It is a crisis of their own making. And by not agreeing to solutions to address the problem, they let the problem fester, and Republicans then call for an audit to make it seem like this is the Evers administration's fault, while all being doing nothing
and save almost $50 million, and then twist that as, you know, an abundant government, right? That it's extravagant, that it's wasteful in a way. But now we're saving this money. Same thing they said.
So we can cut it and give it to the manufacturing agriculture tax credit that overwhelmingly goes to millionaires.
Because they refuse to spend it.
Yep. Let's head over to the phone lines. We got Jake and Eureka calling in. Jake, what's on your mind on this Tuesday afternoon?
Hey, how's it going? You know, these Republicans can hardly be called conservatives these days. Really what they are is just a bunch of anti-government anarchists. And the only reason it seems like any of them ever run for office, these Republicans, is just to screw up the government. I mean, we have one party of Democrats who are at least trying to use our taxpayer dollars on our behalf, you know, to help us. And the Republicans, as soon as they get in, they're like, no, you can't have any help with this. And if we're going to spend any money, it's going to be, of course, on law enforcement to make sure if you're smoking marijuana, you're going to jail. Or we're going to keep track of your menstrual cycles if you're a young woman. Or if you're in Missouri, we're going to make sure that you have to wear long sleeves if you're a woman in the state legislature. You know, they just want to, you know, basically create the Handmaid's Tale in America, make it a reality instead of fantasy.
You're correct there, Jake. There are some facets of government that they would like larger than being able to drown in a bathtub outside of just being large enough to cut taxes. There are very invasive things like that as well that these Republican lawmakers would like to see in the world they live. And I don't believe it is what a majority of Wisconsinites, of Americans, want to see. But without having these conversations, discussing these stories, and talking about it here on these airwaves, and in other facets of life, it's going to be a lot of concentrated efforts to be able to create that government. There is a strong, coordinated effort by conservative, and you can call them other things too. You could call them regressive. You can call them many other things that maybe aren't as FCC friendly, so I can't call them that here. But there are people out there coordinating and doing the work behind the scenes to try to make those things a reality. And it's terrifying when you see these stories in Florida of the governor trying to have young women report their menstrual cycles is disturbing. We're going to be joined by Dan Schaefer coming up in this next segment of the Recombobulation Area. If you want to share a tangent, 844-967-2789. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to Dueling Tangents, broadcasting from the Solidarity Realty Studios here on Madison's Near West Side, across Civic Media, Mad Radio, the brand new branding for our station here in Madison, WMDX, 1580 AM, 92.7 FM. Those frequency numbers haven't changed, but we got some great new logos that if you haven't checked out yet, go over to Mad Radio 92.7 on Facebook and Twitter. You can see all the brand new branding to go with our flagship Civic Media station here in Madison, but also all of the additional stations we have across the state. You can find out on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. I'm joined now by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area for a little recombobulating on a Tuesday afternoon. How you doing today, Dan?
Doing well, Luke. Thanks so much for having me on the show. Always good to join you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I got the text message that you were good to be on the air pretty much right before tip-off, I think, last night. So I know you must have been settling in for that Bucks game, that late night Bucks game, and agreeing to appear here on the Tangents today.
Yeah, that's right. You know, got to get everything, got to get my ducks in a row for the next day before tip-off, and so I can settle in for the week of Night Owl games. That is great for weirdos like me, who like to watch the Bucks after 11 p.m.
West Coast sports trips just ruin an early morning routine for me because I want to stay up for them. I do. I have all the desire to, but then it's like 10:45, 11, 11:15, and I'm like, they're winning by so many. I think I'm just going to go to bed now. So another
They won again, eight in a row. Nice winning streak for the Bucks.
It is, I believe, the longest active winning streak in the association right now. So that's
pretty good.
They're doing all right since Chris Middleton came back from this most recent injury. The team has been looking good, but not having you on just for the sports talk today. We've got the State of the Union address tonight, and then to follow up, the President of the United States, Joe Biden, is coming to Wisconsin tomorrow, fresh off of tonight's speech. And so wanted to have you on to kind of preview what you think is going to all be covered in the State of the Union tonight and what Biden's trip may look like to Wisconsin tomorrow. So what are you thinking? What are you expecting a lot of? Bipartisan, continue same of the same, or do you think we're going to get a little bit of a shift in Biden now that there is divided control with Republicans retaking the House of Representatives back in November for the midterm elections?
Yeah, I think it's going to have a little bit of a different tone to it, I think. But I think broad strokes, it's going to be another Biden speech. You know, he doesn't throw all kinds of curveballs. I think that's part of the appeal for Biden, right? Is that he is a little bit of a return to some normalcy in Washington, D.C. And so I think, he's going to bring what you expect. I think he's going to continue to focus on his economic agenda. The jobs numbers from last week certainly sets the stage for him to tout some economic success and to continue to talk about, ways to continue that momentum in the economy. The jobs numbers really blew away estimates last week. So
yeah,
I think there's a lot of reasons for him to be optimistic about kind of what's next. You know, obviously that nothing for certain, but I think it's, some of the early reporting on what is going to be in that State of the Union speech is just kind of the unrealized parts of his agenda from before. So, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see which priorities that did not make it during the first 2 years of his presidency are going to really be the top line and the headliners for tonight's speech. I think there is going to be a little bit of a shift in tone. And I think we've already seen with the fact that after this evening, Ron Klain, his current chief of staff, is departing the administration. And they're getting prepared, I think, for a little bit more of not necessarily as much bipartisan. I truly believe that the Biden administration will seek as much bipartisan legislation as it can with this current Congress. But it seems like there's going to be a little bit more of regular standoffs with the way that everybody was anticipating the jobs numbers last week, as you've pointed out, and those beating anticipations or expectations, excuse me. And the fact that we've got this looming debt ceiling, that it seems like there's going to be a standoff out there in D.C. For folks that want to tune in for this evening's coverage of the State of the Union, you can do so on your local civic media radio station, going to be anchored by our news director, Terry Bell, joined with several contributors. And you can tune in across civic media from 8 to 10 p.m. Going to take you coverage all night long for the speech and some commentary to follow. But outside of the State of the Union and the president coming, we're in the midst of a election ourselves right now. Kicking off today, in-person absentee ballot voting is underway across the state of Wisconsin. You can find out from your local clerks the details surrounding that process to vote early, effectively, is what it's known as. But it's in-person absentee voting. And you can go to myvote.wi.gov to learn more. Or you can look into outlets like the Recombobulation area for details surrounding this state Supreme Court race, which is the top of the ticket. And Dan, what are your thoughts? So we were 2 weeks out from this four-way primary. You got any predictions or any insight you wanna share?
Yeah, just quick before we jump into that, I just want to say, like, I think it's really important that you make a plan to take a look at what is on your ballot before you go to the polls, so you can prepare, so you can look up, you know, some of those local down ballot races that might not get the type of attention that I think many of them deserve. But, you know, I know there's mayoral elections for you folks out in Madison. I know there's another one of those in Green Bay. I checked my ballot today in Milwaukee, and for me, it's just the state Supreme Court race. So there are a number of aldermanic districts in Milwaukee that have primaries. There are a number of other things that have primaries. But for me, on the west side of town here, we just have the state Supreme Court race. And I think, you know, it's an incredibly interesting race as we get down to the primary. The two liberal candidates, the two conservative candidates, I think the overwhelming line of thinking is that there will be kind of one of each emerging from this primary, and that it will get into your typical binary of a left-right election as we get close to the general election day. You know, I think Janet Protasiewicz had an endorsement today from Ann Walsh Bradley, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, one of the longer serving members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I think that's an important one. Protasiewicz has had a lot of momentum in recent weeks with her campaign. I would expect her to move on to the general election. They had some new advertising up as well. But then on the right, there appears to be a little bit more of an infighting. They seem to be a little bit closer to kind of freak out mode. You know, Daniel Kelly, the former Supreme Court justice who lost his bid for a full term in 2020, said he would not be supporting Jennifer Doro, or would not be endorsing Jennifer Doro were he to lose in the primary. So, you know, among the two camps, I think we're seeing that there's a lot more infighting that is happening on the right than on the left in this election.
And former Justice Kelly marking that one up to Brian Hagedorn's fault as well. So saying that he can't endorse his competitor in this election because he endorsed Hagedorn, and Hagedorn didn't turn out the way that Kelly believes a conservative justice should act on the court. You know, the independent judicial review and all that stuff that conservatives like to say they're all for. Well, Dan Kelly, not a huge fan of Brian Hagedorn when it came down to it, and some of the votes that Hagedorn has made since his time on the state's highest court.
Yeah, Brian Hagedorn voted to not to overturn the election. So, you know, controversial vote to not throw out, what was it, the 20,000 or 200,000 votes from Milwaukee and Dane counties that were the Trump campaign challenged. So, you know, controversial votes like that, and other controversial votes like, you know, saying the governor should be allowed to govern during a pandemic. Those really, you know, fringe, off the deep end type issues that Daniel Kelly just can't get on board with.
Yeah. So I mean, this is going to be a very closely watched election, not only here in Wisconsin, but around the country. We're seeing write-ups about this election in both the New York Times and the Washington Post. But I'm a little worried. I'm not going to lie. Like, the Wisconsin spring elections, I feel like, are sometimes very hard to really predict and see what the outcomes are going to be, especially in a four-way primary. This is the largest primary for a nonpartisan race that we've had, I believe, in some time. I want to say most of these races have seen two or three candidates. And that's been about it. But there's the fact that there are four well-known, and I believe, I mean, from Waukesha, and I is Dan Kelly based out of Waukesha as well? I know the Judge Doro is, but
I think so.
So two conservatives from Waukesha, and then two liberals, one from Madison and one from Milwaukee. Just the makeup of the electorate is a little concerning, especially with the amount of infighting that we're seeing from these conservative candidates. There are some, and I don't know if I'm fully buying into this or not, but is there a chance that these two conservative candidates could elevate and move on to the general election in April? Or do you believe Protasiewicz's momentum is going to propel her to one of those top two spots?
Yeah, nothing could be ruled out when it comes to Wisconsin
not
politics.
Here.
You know, Daniel Kelly and Jennifer Doro just probably, if you really strip everything down, probably have the two highest name recognition of the four candidates. You know, Doro after the Waukesha Christmas parade case, Kelly being a former state Supreme Court justice himself, they're probably the two most well-known on a statewide basis. But also, I do think, you know, it seems pretty likely that Protasiewicz is going to be the candidate to emerge. You know, she has started spending on TV ads. I tuned into the Grammys the other night. She had two ads right before the Grammys started on TV in the Milwaukee media market here. So, you know, that was kind of interesting. And then I do expect, you know, she's spending on TV. And I think, you know, among the and I think the biggest turnout machine in the state of Wisconsin is Dane County. I mean, the turnout numbers that come out of Dane County are astronomical when you put them in context with the rest of the country. What was it, 80-some% that turned out in the fall election? And I think you have a lot of voters in Dane County who are really reliable voters as well. I think we see some more of the swings, you know, in Milwaukee when it comes to turnout. And some of these voters kind of maybe will, you know, get really involved in a presidential campaign, but maybe not in these off-year races. But I think Dane County, being the turnout powerhouse that it is going to, it's going to make its voice heard in this primary for sure.
All right. Dan Schaefer, a little bit more optimistic than myself in these 2 weeks out from the February primary, February 21st, 2 weeks from today. Early in-person absentee voting begins today, and you can learn more, myvote.wi.gov. And this is going to be a very closely contested race. The fact that it's just, we're barreling towards it right now. It is upon us. With 2 weeks away, people are going to begin returning their absentee ballots, voting in person early. And the only way that you, if you want to make your voice heard, is by voting in this race. There are consequences for a 10-year state Supreme Court term. And so the fact that we're going to decide the top two candidates in 2 weeks, I think is all the importance to be talking about this with everybody in your circle and saying, this is what's on the line when it comes to this race, and this is why it's important to get involved and make a plan to vote, as you alluded to, Dan, over these next 2 weeks. We're going to continue the conversation with Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers on this Tuesday afternoon. If you want to share a tangent with us, you can call or text 844-967-2789. But one of the very sexy stories that I want to talk about with Dan next, shared revenue. Oh, I can't wait to dive into this one.
Oh, baby.
Very, very appealing issue here in the state of Wisconsin, with a lot of other important implications to it as well. Stay tuned to Dueling Tangents. One more segment left in today's show. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. We are joined for one more segment of the day by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, helping us recombobulate. And Dan, let's let the listeners know, if they're interested in learning more about the work you're putting out there at the Recombobulation Area, how can they subscribe to learn more and maybe support and contribute to the Recombobulation Area?
Yeah, well, the Recombobulation Area publishes on Substack, and Substack, the way it works on our platform is that you can become a paid subscriber or a free subscriber. And so most of our content is available for free subscribers. There is a few things here and there that are exclusive for paid subscribers. I put up a podcast last week where I talked to Mario Corin of Wisconsin Watch, who has done a ton of reporting on the ongoing political turmoil in the city of Kiel. So I got a chance to talk to him, but it's, you know, also you can sign up for free as well and get the column Recombobulation Area right in your inbox.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. I'm a paid subscriber, full disclosure to everybody out there in the listening audience. So I come for the Bucks takes, but I also stick around for the excellent reporting, like the what's going on in Kiel right now. And I believe the conversations like that and the reporting that both yourself, Wisconsin Watch, are putting out surrounding stories like that. Wisconsin Watch was also the outlet doing the investigative reporting around the Department of Safety and Professional Services. I always want to flip around the acronym there. But DSPS and the licensing crisis that Republicans in the legislature have refused to cooperate with, effectively leading to a shortage of professional workers in all different professions across the state of Wisconsin, is a really weird way to try to address a worker shortage that's going to lead to about 130,000 short by the end of this decade. And so the reporting is excellent. I highly recommend everybody out there in the listening audience to subscribe and contribute to the Recombobulation Area, because it is excellent information. Dan is putting out great information, and you want to subscribe and receive it in your inbox. You absolutely do. And one of the things that you've been discussing, and seems like from you putting it out there in the world, that the Evers administration is on board too, is addressing shared revenue here in the state of Wisconsin and the local crises of budgets just not being able to keep up with the demands of services that either county governments, city governments, village governments of all sizes unable to deliver these services. And Evers now has a proposal out today for how to be able to use more of the taxes here in Wisconsin to address that need. What can you tell us about the Evers proposal around shared revenue out earlier today?
Yeah, so this is something that Tony Evers has talked a lot about lately. I think, you know, he made it a top priority in his campaign, always going after those real hot button issues that are really going to get people riled up. Tony Evers saying that the number one issue in his campaign was addressing shared revenue. So he talked about that in the campaign. And he talked about that in his State of the State address a couple of weeks back, about a proposal to reform the way that shared revenue works in the state of Wisconsin. So we are at, I think before we jump into it, it's important to note that we are at this point where there is a real problem with shared revenue in the state of Wisconsin, because Republicans under their leadership during the Scott Walker era, during the Robin Voss era, have drastically cut shared revenue going to local governments, going to city governments, going to county governments, all sorts of municipal governments that have faced all kinds of budget shortfalls over the recent years, and you know, have been in many ways propped up by the one-time funding from the Biden administration, from the ARPA dollars. And now, you know, that is a cliff looming on the horizon. And I think it's really important that Tony Evers has made this, addressing this, a priority. And so he unveiled the proposal today in detail that will be included in his budget address next week. And I think it's important to, you know, it's important to note that there are some details here that there are going to be worked out. This isn't a thumbs up or thumbs down type of proposal. But his proposal is to send 20% of the state's sales tax back to the local communities. And what that would mean in terms of the budget, it would mean that more than $576 million would be returned to municipalities and counties in the next budget cycle. And that would break down kind of in two parts. The first part would be a public safety aid, which would amounts to $250 million public safety aid that could go to law enforcement, fire, EMS, district attorney's offices, that would go to, you know, just all kinds of local government. We see it here in Milwaukee in a really pronounced way, that's we're really missing out on a lot of that state funding that could go to public safety. And the other portion of that, 56% of it, that would be just kind of general aid, with 70% of that allocated to municipalities, 30% to counties. So this is a sizable investment that would go to local government. And I think, you know, as we've seen during the Robin Voss years in the legislature has consolidated a lot of power, and they've consolidated a lot of money. And so they have $7 billion surplus. And we have a $7 billion surplus. And at the same time, local governments are starved for funding. In the city of Milwaukee, I talked to the budget director last fall. He said if we had been, you know, getting the type of shared revenue payments that we had gotten before the Walker era, that would mean another $150 million would be available to the city of Milwaukee's budget to put towards these various needs in local government. So I think this is a really important move that the governor is making. It also involves a proposal to allow cities to raise their own sales tax, to vote to raise their own sales tax. This has been a big issue in Milwaukee in particular, where local leaders like David Crowley and Cavalier Johnson have really advocated for being able to raise a 1% sales tax that would go directly to the city and county of Milwaukee, which are both facing fiscal cliffs. And I think that 1% sales tax would raise an estimated $160 million a year. So talking about those budget shortfalls, this would go a long way to addressing that. In Wisconsin and Milwaukee in particular, you know, have some of the lowest sales tax rates of any large municipality. So this is some good nuts and bolts governing happening from the governor in this proposal.
It's a sexy issue, shared revenue, I tell you. See, I think the governor, if he's one thing, is consistent. I think he wakes up, he gets his Egg McMuffin that I know that he likes, he reads the recombobulation area, and he puts out good policy ideas like fixing shared revenue here in the state of Wisconsin. Dan Schaefer of the recombobulation area, really appreciate you joining me on this Tuesday afternoon, Dan. And folks, if you're out there in the listening audience and you want more Dan Schaefer, tune in tomorrow to As Goes Wisconsin. Dan's going to be joining Kristen and Jane on their program from 11 to 2. In some part of that 3 hours, you're going to want to just tune in so you don't miss Dan. Stay tuned for, we got Matt Flynn Direct coming up next, the State of the Union coverage tonight, and President Biden in Wisconsin tomorrow. Dueling Tangents will be back at 2. Talk to y'all then.